there. This is Jo McGarry. Welcome to our podcast. A little different from Radio Mojo, the radio show. The podcasts are meant to be a more private, more intimate, more in-depth look behind the scenes with our guests and continuing to bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. If you want to know more about what we do and our work specifically with restaurants and food clients, then you can go to our website, mojomcgarry.com, and this podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or any of the other places where you like to get your podcasts. Enjoy, and thanks for being with us. This edition of our podcast is brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria, now with locations in Kailua, Aina Haina, Pearl Ridge, and University Avenue. Create your own custom pizza with a new selection of specialty crusts, including house-made thin, house-made whole wheat, house-made thick, gluten-free, and my favorite, cauliflower. All of those choices before you even choose the topping. When they say custom-made pizza, they really mean it. Check out Pieology at their existing Hawaii locations and keep listening to hear of the new locations coming soon. For more information on Pieology, opening hours, and locations, simply go to pieology.com. Alex Krauss is the winemaker, co-owner of Birikino Winery, and I am so fortunate to have him here for a few minutes to chat before the beginning of what is about to become a very busy, very special wine show. Alex, it's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. I had the opportunity to do a little bit of snorkeling this morning before the show and just taking in the beautiful outdoors and the I love coming to Hawaii.
It really is very special, isn't it?
It is.
I think you have had such a kind of interesting path into the wine business. I'd love you to share a little bit about what first sparked your interest in wine.
Sure. I think poor judgment is really what first sparked my path in the wine business. I grew up in New England, and my father was a college professor. Unfortunately for me, not a banker or an oil magnet, which is the most recommended way to get into the wine business. But through that chance circumstance, he managed to secure a little bit of work in France for part of his academic career. And so I went to high school in Provence and a year of college. And though I freely admit I mostly lounged about parks and drank liters of beer and chased young French women, somehow the wine bug did actually bite me there. And I fell in love with Rhone varieties. And that was the kind of the beginning of the end.
So one of the interesting things about growing up in Europe is, of course, people treat wine with a great deal of respect and fun, and they believe it's something that should be drunk at dinner time by families, by all members of the family, and that includes, you know, fairly young children. What was your experience when you went over there as a high school student and you realized that you were encouraged to have wine with dinner?
Fantastic. the name of our company, our label, Birikino, translates to naughty in English, and that is very much our spirit, is that they're playful and, you know, focused on deriving the maximum pleasure from food and drink, and, you know, wine is absolutely a central part of that. And I was delighted, you know, at 16 to be offered, you know, tastes of, you know, in hindsight, what I realized were fantastic mid-70s vintages of Chateauneufs with the French family that I lived with when I was a student, and it really did kind of opened my eyes to both wine as kind of a way of life, and also that it, you know, that it can be kind of enjoyed in many different contexts. And
so how did that shape your palate then? You mentioned just a few minutes ago that the Rhone varieties was something that you fell in love with. Was that love at first sight and you stayed there?
It was fairly, I would say, love at first sight. I mean, I suppose if I had plunked down and landed in Bordeaux, then I would have taken a completely different path. But there's something about the wonderful vibrancy and kind of accessibility of forward kind of character of fruit of Grenache, for example, or the aromatic, you know, whites that we work with that immediately kind of gives pleasure, but can also have some real structure and backbone to it that rewards kind of longer term aging and reflection.
And one thing too that's nice is a lot of the wines that you're making are not immediately familiar to the very general wine buying public. And I think we're living, certainly in Hawaii, in a time where people are desperate to go and try new things and experiment with new wines. So one of the reasons that I think your naughty wines are really fun for Hawaii is that they are something different. Tell us about this.
Sure. The first wine that we made together, John Locke and I worked for 17 years for other people in California, and then actually for a stint in Alsace, and John even actually went over and made wine in India, if you can believe that, in Maharashtra. But we both love this one particular grape variety, Malvasia Bianca. It's originally from, we actually know the grandson who brought it over from southern Italy, from Calabria in the 1920s to California, and it has the great virtue of being lovely aromatically. I mean, it really reminds me of Hawaii, and I'm not just saying that because I'm standing here, but it has this fantastic kind of frangipani, jasmine, lychee perfume. It's a grape variety that's more often used for dessert wines, but we generally ferment it in a dry style and find it is a fantastic accompaniment to seafood in particular, and anything kind of flavored with lemongrass or ginger, with more savory foods with sheep's or goat's milk cheeses. I love it. And strangely enough, I find with anything green, with cilantro or pesto sauces or even kind of chimichurri sauces, it really shines.
Oh, so it's the wine really that goes with all the things that have traditionally been quite difficult to pair red wine with.
I think so. And it's not so much, I think the Italians, I guess, kind of figured it out, you know, several centuries ago. And it's an unusual grape variety. And, you know, we're a small company. We're literally two people that kind of do everything from the glamorous truck driving and forklift operations to, you know, the winemaking and the sales. And we're actually, I think, the largest producers of Malvasia in California, because by and large, it gets blended away. We jokingly call it Chardonnay helper, because a little goes a long way to turn kind of otherwise fairly innocuous, anonymous Chardonnay into something with another dimension.
So it's the secret helper that brings some of the beautiful fragrance to what would otherwise be fairly bland Chardonnays. I know that we're going to be able to get this here, because otherwise you wouldn't be sharing them all with us. And Roberto is going to, Roberto Viernes, who's our resident sommelier, I'm sure will be waxing lyrical about where we can get them. For the holidays, we're always looking for lovely, bold, fun, gorgeous, easily drinkable wines. Wines that you can sit down at the table with your colorful plates, whether it's a turkey or a roast beef or a leg of lamb. It seems to me that right in front of me would be that wine.
Yes, indeed. So this is a Grenache, which is the first red wine that we decided to make by virtue of having been in the wine business collectively for four decades, in addition to the third generation Italian family that own and kind of planted the Malvasia. We happen to know a French family, the Bessons, who have farmed for most of the 104 years the Grenache vineyard has been in existence, this beautiful old vine Grenache. And I make it more or less like I make our Pinot. So it's perhaps not your typical Grenache where you're expecting something that's very extracted and very large in scale and high in alcohol with a lot of tannins. We take a much gentler approach. The site itself is also fairly cool. It's right at the base of the Santa Cruz Mountains and close to the ocean, close to Monterey Bay, so you get very crisp, cool nights, and so you end up with a wine that's more Pinot in style and aromatics. It's perfumed, it has kind of generosity of little red fruits, and certainly quite a bit of lovely kind of black pepper spice on the finish, but I think a fantastic accompaniment to kind of turkey and holiday meals, to anything grilled, basically. We're really honored to work with it. It's ungrafted native yeast. We're lazy, basically, in the winemaking. We try to get away with doing the minimum possible. So that generally means, you know, native yeasts, old barrels. We don't rack our wines very often. We don't filter them if we can get away with that. And all with an effort to try to preserve the vibrancy and the focus of these wonderful sites that we have the good fortune to work with.
Okay, so I think if that didn't give you a fantastic picture of some of the wines that have got to be on your holiday buying list, I don't know what else I can do. Birkino is the winery. The labels themselves are just absolutely beautiful. And if you want to stock up on wines that you can gift as you go to parties and take as your hostess gift, I think your hosts will be just really quite stunned with how beautiful these bottles are and, of course, what's inside them too. And I see a very sweet, lovely little Muscat over here.
You do. We've been eyeing this like the Malvasia. It's about a 25-year-old vineyard planted on quite stony mineral soils. There's a lot of decomposed granite, some clay, even a little bit of limestone. It's right up against the mountains, right up against the Santa Lucias. And similar to the Grenache site, it's in a coastal valley that opens onto Monterey Bay with very cool, fog-laden, crisp nights and perfect place for aromatic white varieties. And that's Muscat Canelli that we actually pick fairly early in the season, in early October typically, and then actually put into small champagne baskets and freeze. We happen to live in kind of the heart of the agricultural belt of California, the Salinas Valley, Steinbeck country, and there are an enormous quantity of fantastic quick freeze commercial freezers there. So we actually leave the fruit there, and happens to be, in fact, today that we're actually taking the 2014 crop out of the freezer and pressing it while it's still partly frozen.
And so because you do that, you get that intense concentrated sweetness that's just beautiful.
We get the intense concentrated sweetness. For me, what I love as well is that it's not a kind of raisin oxidative quality. It's very fresh. It concentrates as well as the sugar, also the aromatic components, the acidity, but you leave behind essentially the water. So you get kind of all the benefits, and then we ferment that very, very slowly at low temperatures for months and months. I think we'll probably bottle that come January or February, but it's still quite refreshing. For me, some dessert wines can be very tiring, cloying, and that's kind of the key is balance, that you have kind of the right amount of residual sugar. This is about 13%, and also acidity too, to balance that freshness. So, and hopefully we've accomplished that.
How lovely. I'm excited to go and try all of them and to buy them. Alex, everyone listening can hear the noise level is rising. There are lots of people coming in. So we are going to ask you, where can we go and find out more about Birkino?
You could read about us on our website, which would be www.birichino.com. And there's all sorts of lies and propaganda therein. But thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to the people of Hawaii and beyond about Birkino.
Alex Krauss is the co-owner, co-winemaker of Birkino. Go find out more about them at birkino.com or go to Tamura's or any of the best wine shops and you'll find these delicious wines just in time for your holiday shopping. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Hey, thanks for being with us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, remember, go check out our website, mojomcgarry.com. We'll see you next time.